Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Robbie Bach is a best-selling author and former tech executive who helped lead Microsoft through some of its most dynamic years. As the chief Xbox officer, he spearheaded the creation of the iconic Xbox and Xbox 360. After retiring from Microsoft, he shifted his focus to philanthropy, civic advocacy, and storytelling. His first novel, The Wilkes Insurrection, introduced readers to Senator Tamika Smith in a high-stakes battle against a domestic terror conspiracy. And in his latest novel that we'll discuss in the program today, The Blockchain Syndicate, Robbie continues the gripping saga as Tamika faces a cryptic criminal syndicate threatening America's financial and political foundations. Robbie's insider knowledge of the tech world and his deep involvement in civic and policy circles lends a chilling authenticity to this thriller. With themes ripped from current headlines, AI, disinformation, political extremism, digital vulnerability, The Blockchain Syndicate is not just a suspenseful read, it's been called a wake-up call. The Blockchain Syndicate offers a gripping exploration of trust, technology, and how easily the world we live in, the world we know, can come unraveled. And the author, Robbie Bach, is our guest on This Week in America. Robbie, welcome to the program.
Good to be on with you. Thanks for having me.
Looking forward to this. I love what you've done, and there's so much going on here. And somebody gives a warning when doing one of the references, writing a review. Be careful when you pick it up because you can't put it down. This is one of these books that you'll finish. It'll be 7 o'clock in the morning, and the family's getting up and going on the way. And what happened to you? Well, I just finished the book overnight, but it was worth losing sleep over. The Blockchain Syndicate weaves together so many topics that I mentioned there, topics that we read about in the newspaper, or if we read newspapers or watch TV news anymore. What sparked the idea for the storyline? And then we'll talk about the challenges of tying all of these together as you've done.
Well, the storyline's kind of tied together with comes from a couple of different directions. The first is obviously from a political direction and just the challenges we face in the country, in particular around things that are going on with the budget deficit, which happens to be in the news as we speak. And then on a technical front, I started exploring blockchain technology and trying to understand some of its implications and some of the ways it was being applied. And I was having a chat with somebody who worked at one of these blockchain companies, and the thing they worked on sparked an idea in me for how somebody could use that technology for evil, and who could use it to create a criminal syndicate that was difficult for anybody to even find or track. So I brought those two things together with my main character, my main hero, Senator Tamika Smith, and from there came the Blockchain Syndicate.
When you wrote the first book with Tamika and it's a war hero, did you know that you might bring her back for a book or a series or two, or did you think that was going to be it? I mean, she's such a great character. I mean, she really is a powerful character.
Well, the irony is when I started the Wilkes Insurrection, I started working on that project, she wasn't even intended to be the main character. And so as I started writing, I mean, this is the way sometimes these things work. You start writing and you start to realize, okay, that guy, Johnny Humboldt, who's still a character in both stories, he's a fine character. He's not the centerpiece of the story. Tamika is. And so I didn't start to write a series. I started to write a novel, and it was started to be about Johnny Humboldt. It ended up being about Tamika Smith. And when I got done, I concluded that her story wasn't finished. And, you know, as an author, you have a character like that. You sort of feel like you're their muse. You're the person who's supposed to bring them to life. And Tamika needs more of her story told.
And you've done it so well in this book. The book is available wherever books are sold, The Blockchain Syndicate. Talk about challenges in doing this, that balance between entertainment and the deeper commentary that you're digging into during the course of the book. How difficult was it to strike that balance?
Well, I certainly struggled with that more with the Wilkes Insurrection, honestly, because it was as a first-time novelist.
Yes.
You know, you have the thing you want to say, so you try to say it to up front. My mantra for the Blockchain Syndicate was write a great thriller, period, full stop. So I wanted to make sure that people would read this and just say, Wow, that was a cool thriller. That was super interesting, super engaging. I couldn't put it down. And then you add a secondary goal, which is my second goal was make sure it's really well written. So it's not just a knockoff thriller, but it's actually a piece of literature. And then the third goal was to have people, when they got done, say, great thriller, well written. Oh, by the way, I learned something. Huh. So it kind of cascaded in that order. And as long as I kept that in mind, you know, inserting the messages about what's going on in the country became easy. And because they became a central piece of the plot, you know, what's going on in the country is a thriller in itself. So it was pretty easy to sort of make those things work together.
Well, it really is. You look and you see, in fact, I can't even watch the news anymore. It's like, I can't believe that we're headed in this direction and all those things that are dangerous to the country are talking about it becoming part of everyday life for many people. When people read and get concerned, and I mentioned some are calling it a wake-up call, their obvious
Sure.
question is, what can I do? I just sort of sit back. I'm along for the ride. Is there anything they can do to sort of slow this down to bring some rationality back?
Well, I think there's things, actions people can take on a number of fronts. The first and perhaps obvious is to vote. And when I say that to people, I don't say, don't just vote. You have to vote in the primaries.
Yes,
You have to
yes.
vote in the elections that decide who gets elected. It is so few people vote in the primaries. They wait until the general election. And at that point, depending on where you live, the conclusion is sort of self-evident. And it's the primaries where the real choices are made. So I encourage people to get to dig in deep on the primaries and make sure you're selecting qualified candidates at that level.
The
The
pace
second
of,
thing I'd say,
yeah, go
go
ahead.
ahead.
No, finish. Go ahead.
The second thing I would say is there are tons, hundreds of civic organizations that you can choose to be involved with. Some of them are in your local community, some are in your city, some of them are in the state, some of them are nationally. You know, my favorite civic organization is Boys and Girls Clubs of America. There's a Boys and Girls Club in almost every community in the country. Go volunteer, join the board, help kids, do something in your own personal activity that will help start to drive change.
You were also active in the Bipartisan Policy Center, and so often now, and it wasn't always the case, it seems to be now, and maybe I'm misreading, but bipartisanship is sort of like I'm giving in something. I need to be a winner. We need to come out this winner. There's a weakness if I give up. I've given up my principle if I'm compromising with someone. If there was ever a time for a bipartisan committee out there, and you're active in that, the Bipartisan Center, talk about that. Is that what one of the main elements we're missing now? It's like with the budget. Nobody's going to give on either side. Nobody's talking on either side.
No, I think what's happened is that people have, well, first of all, the people elected have become more extreme, and that's the function of this primary process that I mentioned
Yes.
earlier. And so that makes for real challenges because now you've got these extreme wings of both parties, frankly, that make it very difficult to reach agreement. And then there's sort of this philosophy that has come, I have to get 100% of what I want. And in a country like the United States, nobody is ever going to get 100% of what they want.
Right.
It just doesn't work. The country is too diverse. There's too many different locations. It's a big place, lots of different populations, lots of different people with different points of view. So we have to come together to find things where we get much of what we want. And, you know, in a way, the best solutions are things where everybody thinks they got something and nobody's fully satisfied.
Our guest had
And that's the way things have to work.
Yes, and it used to be, and it somehow we got away from that, and hopefully now we get back to that and into working together. The book we're talking about is The Blockchain Syndicate. Robbie Bach is our guest on the program. His website, Robbie Bach, BACH.com, and theblockchainsyndicate.com. Links for both on our website. Go to thisweekinamerica.us. Click on, of course, any bookstore around the country. You will get information and buy this book and the original book as well. Let's talk a little bit about the research that went into this. You've got this technological background, the politics side. What all did you go through to put this together and to tie all of these different elements together?
Well, in each of the stories I write, I'm a big believer in authenticity. So take Tamika Smith, for example. She is a woman of color. She's in the military. She was an Olympic class sprinter. That's her background. Oh, she's also a lawyer. I am none of those things. So I did a lot of background research talking to people in the Olympic movement, talking to people who are lawyers. My sister was a lawyer. I've done research with people who have grown up in the social environment that she grows up with. So you do, and certainly met with a number of people in the military, in particular women of color in the military, and the experiences they had. So you have to do that research. In the Bipartisan Policy Center case, and in the Wilkes insurrection, or sorry, in the blockchain syndicate, the budget deficit and the debt limit play a central role. Well, so I went to two experts at the BPC, had them read what I wrote. They gave me corrections and suggestions. They helped me make sure the action that takes place in the U.S. Senate was authentic. So you do that background research and really dig in. And then a meaningful portion of the blockchain syndicate takes place in the Netherlands, which is a country I spend a lot of time in. So I went to the locations that are in the book, and I took pictures, and I walked around, and I got a sense for it. I saw it in different weather conditions, which turns out to be important in the book. And then you're able to write about it from firsthand experience. So as an author, you can do some of this online. A lot of it you have to do in person, and you have to go to the experts to find out.
Let's talk about the budget deficit for a second here. It plays a major role. So many people are like, they argue they can print money. It's not that big of a thing. How big a thing is that? And is that a threat to our national security?
Well, I think it is. And I think there, the ability to just print more money all rests on the fundamental premise that people will continue to buy treasury securities to pay for our debt.
Yes.
And the reason they do that is because they think the dollar is the place they want to hold their securities. And treasury securities are safe, ergo, we'll keep funding the debt. At some point, you run the risk that people wake up and say, okay, there's too much risk in that. The US government isn't reliable. The dollar isn't that secure. There are other alternatives. I'm going to stop doing that. If that were to happen, we wouldn't be able to fund the deficit, or the expense of funding the deficit would become so great that we'd be in a very difficult situation. Even as it is, the interest on the debt is a major budget item for the US
Yes.
government. And that number keeps going up. So these cycles, everything's fine until it's not. And because people's willingness to hold dollars is an emotional thing, not not even a rational factual based thing, but it's something that they've done for a long time. The minute that cycle breaks, the US government and the American people are in trouble.
The book is The Blockchain Syndicate. The author is Robbie Bakker, our guest on the program today. In The Blockchain Syndicate, you explore the disinformation as a tool of destabilization. How concerned are you about that? And I'm talking again about current issues, current situations out there. How concerned are you?
Well, I think it's a real problem from a number of perspectives. The first I will say is just at a personal and emotional level, people now just are willing to call things that are lies facts.
Yes.
And once that happens and people don't challenge them, suddenly what is the truth becomes difficult to determine and unfortunately somewhat irrelevant. There's a something that's a fact, and there's an interview, and somebody says, "Well, that's just not true. That's a lie." And so we go on, and suddenly something that was a fact becomes a non-fact, or somebody claims something is true and it's not, and nobody, there's no fact-checking, there's no verifiability. People just move on. That to me is a huge problem. And then you have the technical problem of people being able to create things that look and act real that are not in fact real.
Yeah, yes.
And so now you have a fact pattern that is people's willingness to lie and call it a truth, and people's willingness to create things that are fake and calling them real. And the average consumer's ability to dissect those things. It's a really big problem.
the ability to present a fake, totally AI-produced newscast, and people are seeing, and they're seeing their local anchor or whatever say something, and they think this is a legitimate newscast, and it's not. You touch upon issues, current issues again, the school shootings, for example. You've got that as a major plot point in your book. How do you approach something like that?
You know, as an author, again, you approach it from two perspectives. One, there's the factual aspects of it. So I went to a friend who serves on a Boys and Girls Club board locally here, who had 20 plus years in the local police force. And I said, read the police response to this shooting and tell me where I got it wrong. And he sent me 2 pages of notes on things I should change, things I should think about, how the police respond to an active shooting situation. So as an author, you try to make the scene as real as you possibly can. And then the second part I've really tried to dig into is the emotional response to that. The emotional response from a victim in this case, the emotional response from the parents of a victim in this case, the emotional response from a friend of the victim, my Senator Tamika Smith in this case, and try to write as best you can from the heart about what that's like. Matching those two things together is what brings the scene to life for people. And as scary and as sad as it is part of what is going on in our society today. And we need to deal with that and face up to it and understand the implications.
Yeah, it's reality. And far too frequently, the book is The Blockchain Syndicate. The tech background that you have, look at the tech people today, the tech companies out there, the tech, the leadership is what I'm trying to get at. It's an age of rapid innovation, unintended consequences. What moral responsibility do they have? Mm. And do they feel they have a moral responsibility?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. I can only give you my personal opinion. My opinion is that leaders have moral responsibilities regardless of what position they're in. So you have a moral responsibility if you're a government leader. You have a moral responsibility if you're a religious leader. That one's more easy to understand.
Yes.
But I think you have a moral responsibility if you're a business leader as well. Businesses, in particular in the tech space, have so much influence over what goes on in the country that to say, well, I'm just going to do what's right for shareholders and the consequences, unintended or otherwise, aren't my problem, I just don't think is a responsible place for people to be. And I can say that both at a personal level, but I'll also say it at a business level. Look, unintended consequences are bad for businesses in the long term. They may not affect your P&L today, but the disruptions that are going on in our country right now are bad for the future of business in the country. In the short term, it might be okay. In the long term, it won't be. And that's the thing that I think leaders sort of miss. They sort of optimize for next quarter's profits and for what we're doing today. And they aren't thinking about the implications of instability in the U.S. economy and instability with the budget deficit and social instability in the country and what that might mean for their future business.
As you're reading The Blockchain Syndicate, one question comes to mind. That's an increasingly divided nation. Great leaders are called upon to save our democracy. Mm. Do we have people in that category that fall into that great leadership category?
Yes. And I say that affirmatively and in a convicted way. I think part of the problem we have is the leadership in our country has been around arguably too long. And I think we have a lot of leaders who have given greatly to our country over a long period of time. And yet, in a way, they may have stayed past their useful time.
Yes.
And I hate saying that about people who've contributed, but at some point, it's time to move on. There are a number on both Republican and the Democratic side of young leaders who I think would make different decisions and move the country in a different direction. They're just not the people who are in the space right now. And you know, we need that generational shift to happen. And it isn't just about age, but I think it is about a perspective on the future, and people who are going to have to live that future have to lead us into it.
When you read the reviews of The Blockchain Syndicate, everybody is talking about the pacing. They really appreciate, again, you can't put the book down when you start reading it. Talk about doing that and pacing it and keeping that level and the interest there, suspense there throughout the entire book.
Well, again, in the first book, The Wilkes Instruction, I really learned a lot about pacing. And I had to do a lot of editing on that book to make sure the pacing was right. And so when I started writing The Blockchain Syndicate, I really felt like I had a handle on a style of, okay, this is a chapter. It's a self-contained entity. What at the end, what's going to happen at the end of this chapter that's going to make the person want to continue? And each chapter has to have a little bit of that cheese at the end that makes you want to continue going forward to find out next. The second way I try to maintain interest is the book doesn't have a single perspective. So in one chapter, you're seeing the scene from Senator Tamika Smith's perspective. In another chapter, you're seeing it from one of the villains' perspectives, Eli Bassoff or Lee Bowen or Nastya Andropov. There's plenty of villains in this story. In another chapter, you're seeing it from my tech genius, Bryce Roskovich's perspective. And so with the perspectives constantly changing, there's a little bit of a cliffhanger for each of those characters. And you have to wait three chapters to hear how it's going to continue. And so people, you know, tend to keep going. They want to know what's going to happen next. And, you know, that's more art than science, but it's something I've worked pretty carefully on.
Talk about the technique in doing that. You have so many people with so many things going on, so many storylines, subplots that are going through, like, you know, spinning all these different plates and trying to keep them all going. How challenging is that from an author standpoint to keep all of that going and, you know, dividing it up and making sure that all these stories end up being resolved or coming up with some type of solution at the end? How difficult is it to juggle all of that, all the different characters, all the different subplots?
Well, I think the plot lines for each of the characters isn't as hard to juggle as you might imagine, because as I'm building the story, I'm sort of keeping track of each character's plot line and I'm coming back to their plot line every two or three chapters. So that part I found pretty easy to manage. I have an end game in mind, so I know where I'm trying to get each character to, and I just have to pace them through. The problem is actually in the narrative perspective. So when I start a chapter, I have to say, okay, in this chapter, I'm in Tamika Smith's head. So I only know things that Tamika Smith knows, and I can only describe things that Tamika Smith sees. If you're an author, you know the whole story. So you actually know what the other people in the chapter are experiencing and thinking. But I can't express that because Tamika Smith is the perspective I'm writing
yes.
from. And I've really struggled with that. That took some real editing to make sure I had that right down to the place where I needed to. Because it's so tempting to want to describe somebody else's emotion as they are experiencing it. I have to describe it as Tamika Smith is experiencing it.
You hear people talk about writer's block. I would think in a story like yours, you've got all of these elements going. I would think it'd be difficult to stop. Can you turn off the ideas and lead a normal life? You're a very busy person. I think once you get going, it's like, I'm going to lock the door. If it takes me a week or two, I'm going to be here. I can't quit right now.
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on. One, as a writer, after about three and a half hours, I'm just not that productive, even if I have more to say. And so after about three and a half hours, if I'm on a roll with a character or a storyline, I will literally write bullet points. Here's what's going to happen next. Boom, 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 boom. But I will stop writing because I know the actual quality of the verse isn't going to be very good. And then I'll come back to that the next day. The other advantage I have over many writers is I don't write every day. Writing is one of several things that I do. I do a lot of board work. And so there are days where I just can't write at all. And that's hard because it means I got to get back into the story the next time I come back to write. But it's amazing for your mind in terms of refreshing your perspective. You know, I have not had, strangely, an experience where I've gotten to the keyboard and said, I just can't write. I'm blocked. That just hasn't happened to me yet. Knock on wood when I say that. And I think part of the reason is because I move away from the story and then come back to it with some frequency.
I talked in the beginning about how easily, maybe we don't realize how easily maybe the world as we know can come unraveled. Is that an overstatement, or do you look at that and go, it wouldn't take that much for the unraveling to begin?
I don't think it would take that much for the unraveling to begin. And I'm not a doomsayer. Like, I think In the end of the day, we will get through the challenges we have. The country has done this, multiple times, as recently in the late as the late 60s, where we've had really traumatic problems in the country, and we've gotten through them and gotten to the other side. So I'm an optimist by nature, but I don't think it takes very much. I mean, you think about COVID just as a small, simple example. Something happens someplace in China, whether it was in a lab or in a marketplace. I'm not even going to debate the facts. But what happened wasn't big, and it changed the world for 3 years. And in fact, has changed the way we do business almost permanently.
Yes.
So, little tipping points actually matter quite a bit. And, we have to be careful about not assuming everything's going to be smooth, just because it seems it's okay right now.
You do this. The writing is so visual. We can see this happening. We have the vision of what these characters look like as they're interacting. Are you talking about a movie with this?
Well, look, I think Tamika Smith deserves to be on the big screen for
Yes.
sure. Whether that happens or not, the movie industry, if you think the book industry is a complicated process of what gets published and what doesn't, what gets made into a TV show or a movie, that's a whole nother world.
Yes.
So, I've explored it a little bit, but not a lot, just because of the complexity. But look, if somebody read it and said, "Hey, this would be really exciting," I think it would be a great thing, and I think the story would carry the day, and Tamika would be a fabulous heroine on the screen.
In the meantime, we want to see her more. We want to read about her more. What are you working on? Will there be another installment with Tamika?
Yeah, I think the short answer to that is I want to keep writing. I have found in my second career, 22 years at Microsoft, I loved that time, but I have found in a second career something that I'm incredibly passionate about, emotional about it. I love doing it. It takes time, and yet I still love doing it. So I will write more, and I'm sure I will write more about Tamika Smith. I've been the way I write is I write the prologue of a book first, which means that's a scene that takes place two-thirds of the way through the story. And then I write to that scene. And so what's currently going on in my head as I think about picking up the keyboard again, is what that first prologue scene would be for the next wave of Tamika's actions. And I have some ideas that I'm kind of bouncing around, and then we'll see where that takes us.
Looking forward to that. I'm going to take 30 seconds at the end. Something you do now is you call it, you're a civic engineer. Talk about that and actually being out there and trying to make a difference.
Well, look, I believe that all of us have an opportunity to influence what goes on in our communities and to make things better in our communities just with simple things that we do. So for me, that's board service with Habitat for Humanity and with Boys and Girls Clubs and with the Bipartisan Policy Center. I do a ton of mentorship with college students and young adults. I do a lot of public speaking to try to motivate people. I think of my purpose in life as inspiring an army of civic engineers and getting these people to be out in the civic community and trying to remake what we're doing from the bottom up. Everything doesn't have to happen from Washington, D.C. We can change our country one step at a time. And I think that's a powerful mission to be on, and one that I truly enjoy.
Well, in the meantime, we will read the Blockchain Syndicate. The book is available wherever books are sold. Robbie Bach is the author. Our guest, Bach is BACH, if you're Googling that. The blockchainsyndicate.com is the website, the other website besides Robbie's. Book available literally wherever books are sold. Links on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Robbie, a pleasure having you on the program. I love the passion for writing, for creating characters, stories that we can read, be entertained, and frightened a little bit at the same time. They dramatically get our attention. Thank you so much for being with us on the program.
Thanks for having me. Really enjoyed the conversation. Great questions.
Well, thank you. A pleasure having you with us. Our guest, Robbie Bach. The book is The Blockchain Syndicate. You're listening to This Week in America, back on today's program, right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.